As he shifted his hands, there were humming in his ears the incantations which his stern-willed mother had muttered as she got him ready, but which themselves echoed hither from much further off, and were, in their beginnings, much older than his own experience. I cover the child, I cover the stone, let the master eat, let the father eat, at thy feet must fall the brethren of the deeps. Joseph, as I said, was both amused and annoyed. His sense of humor was strong, but the statesman in him felt bound to come to the rescue of such order and justice as could still be saved. As soon as the old man had exhausted himself and his blessing, Joseph said, "Father, forgive me, but I had placed the lads in their right order before you. If I had known you meant to cross your hands, I would have placed them differently. May I call your attention to the fact that you put your left hand on Manasseh, my elder son, the right on Ephraim, the later born? The bad light here is to blame for your having misblessed, so to speak. Will you not quickly correct it, change your hands back again, and perhaps just say Amen? For the right hand is not the right hand for Ephraim. It belongs to Manasseh." And as he spoke, he even took the old man's hands, which still lay upon the young heads, and would have respectfully changed them. But Jacob held them as they were. "I know it, my son, I know it," said he, "and let it be so. You rule in Egypt and take your fifth, but in these things I govern, and I know what I do. Do not grieve. This one," he raised his left hand slightly, "will also become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. As I have done it, and indeed it is my will that it become a saying in Israel, so that when a man will bless anyone, he shall say, 'God make thee as Ephraim and Manasseh.' Mark it, Israel." "As you command," said Joseph. The young men drew their heads away from under the hands of the blessing, adjusted their waists, smoothed their hair, and were glad to stand up straight again. They were not much moved by the incident. And they were right, insofar as the time-honored fiction which made them the sons of Jacob, and at the same time descendants of Leah, had no effect upon their individual destinies. They passed their lives as Egyptian nobility. It was only their children, or, more correctly, some of their grandchildren, who gradually, by marriage, intercourse, and religious adherence, went over to the Hebraic side. Finally, some of them moved from Keme to Canaan, and in the end, there was a posterity descended from Ephraim and Manasseh. But there was also another point on which the indifference of the young men was justified, for our researches indicate that at the height of their increase, the tribe of Manasseh counted a good 20,000 more souls than Ephraim's tribe. Moreover, Jacob had had his little game with the blessing. He was really exhausted after the ceremony, and not quite clear in his head. Joseph begged him to lie down, but he still sat up straight in his bed and talked to his favorite about a parcel of land he was making over to him as a portion apart from his brothers, which he had taken out of the hands of the Amorites with his sword and with his bow. That could only be the piece of cornland before Shechem, by the gate of the city, which Jacob had once acquired of the gouty Hamor, or Hemor, for 100 pieces of silver, certainly not by his sword and his bow. And anyhow, how did Jacob, the man of tents and of peace, come by a sword or a bow? He had never cared for nor used such tools, and never ceased to take it ill of his sons that they had laid about them so savagely at Shechem. Indeed, by reason of their conduct, it was doubtful whether the purchase was still valid, and Jacob could still dispose of the triangle of land. At all events, he did so, feebly, and Joseph thanked him, with his forehead on his father's hands, for this special gift. He was touched by this token of Jacob's love, and at the same time by the strange phenomenon that it was precisely the old man's feebleness which made him see himself in the heroic role of a warrior. Joseph judged that it betokened the nearness of the end, and decided not to go back to Menphe, but to await at Pa-Kos the summons to the final gathering. The Last Assembly. "Gather yourselves together, ye children of Jacob. Come in your hosts and assemble together round Israel your father, that he may tell you who you are and what shall befall you in future times. That was the call which Jacob made to go forth out of the tent to his sons when he judged the hour to have come when he should hold his dying speech. For he held his life in his own hands and precisely knew what strength he had left, that he might expend it in his last words and so die. Through Eliezer, the old young man, his head servant, he sent out the call. He told it to him, and then had him repeat it several times, so that Tomasik might have it not only more or less right, but letter perfect. Not come hither, but come in your hosts, and not present yourselves before Israel, but assemble together. Now say it all again, and forget not the two things, who you are, and what shall befall you. There, at last that is right. I fear I have spent too much strength instructing you. Now be off. And Tomasik kilted his garment and ran in all directions so fast that the earth seemed to spring towards him. He put his hands round his mouth and cried, Assemble ye together, ye sons of Israel, and gather together as you are, that good may come to you from day to day. He ran to all the settlements, to the fields, to the herds and flocks, the royal ones over which the five were set, and to the others, ran to and fro through moor and fen, with muddy water splashing his lean legs, for it was ebb time, the fifth day of the first month of the winter season, what we should call the beginning of October, and in the delta, after a long spell of late heat, it had rained a good deal. He kept shouting aloud with his hands round his mouth into the open country and into the dwelling-houses, Whoever you are, assemble, sons of Jacob, and meet in your hosts about him for future times. He ran into Pacos close by. Joseph was stopping there with the magistrate, and there were guards before the door. Tomasik, with disgraceful inaccuracy, shouted out the words which Jacob had so carefully composed and designed for posterity. But it did not matter. Their effect was the same, and they were straightway obeyed in haste by all who heard them. Pharaoh's friend hurried to his father's house, with him Maisakme, his major-domo, and many curious outsiders heard the call and came to hang about. The 11 awaited their brother at the entrance to the curtained tent. He greeted them in a suitably grave and weighty manner, kissed Benjamin, the little man of 47, and talked with them all a short time in low tones about their father's condition and the probability that he thought to hold his last speech and depart. They answered him with their eyes cast down and rather tight-lipped, for as usual they were afraid of the old man's tongue, and knew that the stern old father tyrant would probably spare them nothing in this final hour. Each one was privately telling himself, as human beings do, Good Lord, probably it will turn out all right. Reuben, the 78-year-old shepherd tower, was clenching his jaw until his facial muscles were taut. He had behaved badly with Bilhah. He would certainly get to hear most explicitly about that on this solemn occasion, and he armed himself accordingly. Simeon and Levi, who in their young days had laid about them like savages at Shechem on their sister's account, that was long, long ago, but they could count on getting it dished up again with due solemnity. They, too, braced themselves for the ordeal. There was Jehuda, who had had an affair with his daughter-in-law by mistake. He had no manner of doubt that the old man would be harsh and cruel enough to hold it against him, even on his deathbed, the more so because he had been a little in love with Tamar himself. There they all were, and all of them but Benjamin, the stay-at-home, had once sold Dumuzi down into Egypt. Jacob, on this occasion, would be quite capable of making a song about it. They all expected it, and set their teeth accordingly. Particularly the sons of Leah did, for none of them had forgiven their father for choosing, after Rachel's death, not Leah, their mother, but Bilhah, Rachel's maid, for his first and favorite wife. Jacob had had his failings, and all his life he had been arbitrary in his exercise of feeling. They thought defiantly that he had been just as guilty as they were in the Joseph affair. He ought to remember that before he used the occasion of his grand, dying harangue to take them to task. In short, dread of the coming scene made them all awkward. They were putting on hurt faces beforehand. Joseph saw it, and spoke in the most friendly way. He went from one to another, putting out his hand and saying, "Let us go in to him, brothers, and let us in all humility bear the judgment which our dear one inflicts on us, each one his own. Let us hear him, if necessary, with forbearance. For forbearance, indeed, ought to descend from God to man, and from father to child. But if it does not, then the child must practice reverent forbearance, and be great in pardon towards the greater, for that he is weak in pardon. Let us go in. He will judge us with a feeling for truth, and we shall all get what is coming to us. Myself, too, believe me." They went quietly into the tent, the Egyptian Joseph with them. He did not go first, although they would have had him lead them. He went with Benjamin behind the sons of Leah, and only in front of the children of the maids. Mysachme, his steward, went in too, partly with the justification that he had long been in the story and played his part in its embellishment, but partly too because the gathering was to a large extent public, and it turned out that everybody might go in who chose. It was very full in the room of death when the 12 were inside, for besides Damasik, the crier, there stood round the master's couch a number of under-servants of his household staff, and many of his descendants either stood or lay on their faces farther off. There were even women with children, some giving them the breast. Boys sat on the chests along the walls, and their conduct was not always seemly, but all incorrectness was quickly suppressed. The hangings before the tent had been flung wide open. The courtyard folk and the little people from the hamlet of Pa-Kos, a great host in all, had a clear view, and were in a way included in the gathering. The sun declined, and the crowd outside was outlined against an orange-tinted evening sky, a shadowy mass with indistinguishable forms and faces. But the two oil lamps, flaring on high stands at the head and foot of the bed, sent their rays from within to pick out a striking figure, a gaunt matron in black, between two very broad-shouldered men. Her gray hair was covered with a veil. She was Tamar, the resolute woman, with her doughty sons. She had not entered, she kept outside, for it might be that Jacob in his dying speech would come to speak of Judah's sin with her. But she was here, present and on the spot. And how was she present, now that the time had come for Jacob to hand down the blessing to him with whom she had sported by the way and brought herself into the succession? Even without the lamplight, that proud profile would have been unmistakable against the sallow, rainy sky. He who had once instructed her in the world and in the great history into which she had wormed her way, he who had summoned this deathbed gathering, Jacob ben Yitzchak, blessed before Esau, lay propped on his cushions under a sheepskin on his deathbed at the back of the tent, in just so much command of his powers as he needed to be. The waxen pallor of his skin was faintly tinged by the tinted twilight and the glow from the charcoal in the basin nearby. The look on his face was exalted and mild. A white band which he usually wore when he sacrificed was round his forehead. The white locks came out under it on the temples and ran down in even width into the patriarchal beard that covered all his chest, thick and white beneath the chin, farther down sparse and gray. Through it showed the fine, witty, rather bitter mouth. He had not moved his head, but the soft eyes with the swollen ducts beneath were rolled sidewise so that they showed much yellowish-white eyeball. His gaze sought his sons as they entered, and a lane quickly opened for them to the bedside. Damasik and the servants drew back, and those begot across the Euphrates, together with the little one whose mother had died of him in Abram's land, bowed down on their foreheads, and then stood drawn up round their father and head. Complete silence had fallen. All eyes were fixed upon Jacob's ashen lips.